What does it mean to live an embodied life? What does embodied mean? Well, the answer really isn't as simple as a cut and dry dictionary definition. And so that's the topic that we're going to explore on this week's Feather Mane Wisdom Show. You're listening to Feather Mane Soul Wisdom, a podcast designed for people looking to live embodied lives and find their authentic selves. This show is hosted by Kit Kailstow, body theologian and spiritual mentor. If you're looking to get in touch with your inner spirit, then this show is for you. Thanks for listening. And now, this week's show. I have to admit, I like the term embodied. And one of the reasons why I like this term is because I think we don't think about our bodies enough. And if like me, you have chronic pain or you have a chronic illness, or if you're neurodivergent, maybe you think that you think about your bodies too much. You know, how you sit, how you stand, how you move, how you exist in a space, how your body feels on any given day. All of that can lead us to feeling as if we think about our bodies too much. But the truth is, our culture does not really want us to think about our bodies, unless it's thinking about how that we can make our bodies strive for the thin Western culture of norm. You know, we see tons. One of the things I'm really noticing is I'm seeing so many ads for the weight loss drugs. And of course, there's lots of ads for workout equipment, for clothing, for the ways you look. And for the most part, you know, here in America, most of those ads are promoting a certain specific ideal, which really doesn't fit in with, let's be honest, the way the vast majority of our bodies act, look, and feel on any given day. I'm sure I'm not the only person who has never really had a sense of what's cool or what's in and prefers to wear my own style. I mean, that's pretty common among my friend groups. And the truth is, if I'm hanging out here on the homestead, I'm going to be comfortable. I'm going to wear my oversized t-shirts. I'm going to wear my leggings because I never know if I'm going to have to work in the pasture, if I'm working here in the office cabin. I don't know what I'm going to be doing at any given moment. And so I need clothes that reflect that. And so that just means that wearing something fashionable or something stylish, you know, doing my hair, doing my makeup, doing my nails, doing anything like that, just really isn't something I think about. And so as an embodied being, one of the stories that I have internalized is that I'm bad at when I identified as a cisgender woman, I was bad at being a girl. You know, in school, I was bad at being a girl. I was bad at being a woman. I didn't understand hair, nails. But the truth was, I didn't want to understand that. I thought all of that was, it just wasn't for me. That was not something I wanted to spend my time on. And so that story that I am basically bad at being a body, I am too big, I'm too loud, I'm too brash, I show up in a space and I exist in a space in a different way than what society wants us to do. That, you know, was something I've lived with for a great many years, for several decades, to be honest with you. And so when I think about being embodied, I think about myself. Right now I'm sitting in an office chair recording into my microphone. And if I just kind of gently fold my arms in front of my body, you know, this is my space. In horse parlance, we call it a hula hoop. Or at least one of the trainers that I used to follow called it a hula hoop. And that's just kind of a 3-foot space around you that is your personal space. This is your bubble that you live in. And in horse training and horse parlance, this particular trainer didn't want the horse to enter your hula hoop or enter your bubble without your permission. And I understand that horses are very large creatures. They have a mind of their own. They can hurt you. But that's also not how I exist or with my herd here at home. I pretty much am one of the herd. They see me as a member of the herd. And so that's, you know, that's how I embody my existence, which is to the horses, they think I'm just, you know, part of them. I'm just shaped a little differently and I live on the outside of the fence. But when we think about being embodied, the reason why I love the word embodied and I love talking about living as an embodied being is because it gives me permission. It gives me permission to exist. And that may sound a little strange to you. I understand that. I want you to stay with me. I want you to keep an open mind here as we talk about this. I often describe the work that I do at people who live in the Venn diagram of queer, neurodivergent, and chronically ill and or disabled. And wherever you fall in that Venn diagram, if you're in only one circle, if you're in an overlap of two circles, if you're in the overlap of all three circles, the truth is you often haven't been given permission to exist. If you are chronically ill, then depending on your body size, you might be shamed for that. If you are neurodivergent, you often, especially if you're assigned female at birth, that's not something that gets recognized until you're older in life. For many people, it's because they have neurodivergent kids that they're raising, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, for somebody like me who didn't have kids, you know, I didn't realize it till just a couple of years ago, and I'm almost 50. So I know a lot of people listening to this might be younger than that, but if you can imagine going through 45, 47 years of just thinking you were wrong, that's a pretty heavy load to carry. That is a lot. That's difficult. And so if you're listening to my voice and you're like, yeah, I'm right there with you. I'm in the exact same boat. I want to tell you that I see you, that you are not alone, and that I understand that that was a really difficult load for you to carry. Whatever that realization was later in your life. And hey, you know what? If you didn't realize you were neurodivergent until you were a teen or until your 20s or 30s, that's difficult too. I would really like us to get away from having what is commonly called online trauma Olympics or struggle Olympics. The truth is, whether you waited 27 or 47 years for that neurodivergent diagnosis, that does not negate that those years before that diagnosis were probably full of a lot of confusion, a lot of misunderstandings, a lot of self-awareness, a lot of self-concern, a lot of being told that you were existing wrong. You were thinking wrong. The way you were acting was wrong. And that's a heavy load to bear. And so I think we should just be kind to one another, be kind to ourselves, and just admit that we're all going through things. We are humans having a human experience, and as part of that human experience, we are going through things. And when we start to think about our embodied experiences or living an embodied life, a fully embodied life, one of the biggest things, besides that permission to exist and exist in whatever form, whatever shape, whatever layers, whatever intersectionalities that your life looks like, when you start to give yourself permission for that, then you also start to give yourself permission to not be okay. It's okay to not be okay. And we start to see that other people aren't okay. And we start to think about how to offer them compassion, how to offer them support. Now, I want to be very clear here. Hurt people hurt people. And hurting people is not okay. And so whatever, you know, whatever you can think about as far as trying to extend compassion to those who want to hurt you, it is perfectly okay. And as a human emotion and as a human experience, we can hold both the need for compassion as well as a need to set boundaries and to declare when something is not okay in our minds at the same time. We can multitask. I know as a neurodivergent person, sometimes, you know, I have ADHD and we talk about monotropism or your mind kind of sliding into familiar routes of thinking. We talk about being able to focus on one thing at once. In fact, my husband and I were just joking yesterday that if he had a little bit of my distractibility and I had a little bit of his focus, between the two of us, we would have appropriate levels of attention on things for what we want to do as far as, you know, getting things done, remembering to do things, so on and so forth. But the thing is, we can hold that need for compassion with saying, hey, I get that you're hurting, but what you're doing is not right. That is all part of being an embodied experience. And I would argue that that sort of action is actually required of us to live a fully embodied experience. Because when we live fully embodied, when we start to recognize all the nuances and all the layers of ourselves, then we can start to think about how all these nuances and how all these layers intersect. And I heard the term once called body schema. I read it in a book. I'll drop the link in the show notes because I love this book. It's very academic and it kind of gets into the weeds of body theology. But oh my gosh, this book completely changed my relationship with the word embodied. And so this body schema, and if you think about anything you buy, we just bought a new microwave because ours croaked very sadly on Thanksgiving Day. But we just bought a new microwave and it comes with a book. And the book tells you this is what the buttons are. This is what the buttons do. This is how you set it up. You know, a new power tool. You buy some of that furniture that you put together yourself. Even if you buy furniture that you don't put together yourself, it usually comes with the little booklet. That is, you know, you can think of that as the schema or how that object works. We don't come with little booklets. People try to write booklets for us, but it doesn't really work out that well. I will not go down a rabbit hole about psychology, but, you know, you can have a booklet for yourself that's in your heart. The booklets are constantly being written for ourselves. That's our body schema. And so you can just think about the various layers of your life. We start with you were born. What gender did they assign you? Does that gender align with your gender identity? Do the things that you were taught about your gender, even if the gender you were born with aligns with your gender identity, so even if you're cisgender, then were the things that you were told about your gender, do those now align with how you understand? And so I'll go back to me, you know, being born a girl in the 80s, big hair, my hair didn't do that. So I just thought I was bad at being a girl. That was part of my schema. Now, as an adult, I realize, you know what? It is perfectly okay to be someone who presents as female and who doesn't wear makeup, who doesn't care about doing their hair, who doesn't care about doing their nails. Because let me tell you, when you do farm chores, fancy nails kind of don't go with farm chores. You know, there are some aspects of my life that don't lend itself to the schema, the cultural schema of being female. And so again, the cultural schema of being male is a certain opinion. You have to look a certain way. You have to act a certain way. That cultural schema may not align with the way you see your masculinity or your gender identity, it may not align with what is healthy and what is good for you and the people around you. It may not align with things that you learned as an adult. You know, we're all brought up as kids. Sometimes we're brought up in environments that are very strict in telling us how to behave or what to do. That all creates a body schema. And so if you think about a body schema as that manual is going to have different sections. And those sections may contradict themselves. They may be weird. I shouldn't say weird. I'm sorry. That was a bad word choice. They may be contradictory. They may be outside of our experience or outside of our understanding. They may be something that we don't want to be or that doesn't align with our current existence. And so when we think about all of these things going through, we have our body schemas and you have your gender, your sexuality, you have your religion, you have the things that you were taught by the people in your life, whether that's your school, whether that's the media you can consume, whether that is, you know, parental figures or other adults in your life, trusted friends. And then you have everything else that's out in the world, everything else that is out. And there's a cultural schema. And so all of this kind of combines and coalesces and mixes up like a casserole, to keep the Thanksgiving metaphor, since I'm recording this on Thanksgiving weekend, that all mixes in our body. And that gets overlaid onto our body, onto the way we show up in spaces, the way we move, the way we act, the way we talk. And that's our body schema. And so cultural schemas, our own personal schemas, family schemas, all of that gets overlaid on top of our body schemas. And they always, I would almost say always, don't play completely nicely together. Now, depending on how you grew up, depending on where you grew up, depending on several different factors, including how much money you had while growing up, as well as racial and ethnic factors and racial and ethnic schemas, that, you know, you can internalize some really bad shit. You can internalize some really bad things about you and internalize some really bad ways of being. You can also internalize some very wonderful things. I don't want to dismiss that. But I think for a lot of us coming into embodied being and being embodied beings, what that means is that we now have permission to examine every single one of those stories. We now have permission to look at every single one of those schemas and say, hey, does this still serve me? And I just want to step back for a moment because, for one, that sounds like a lot of work. And I'm not going to lie, it is a lot of work. But also, I want to step back for a moment because the ability to examine and question things is part of being an embodied person. I bet you were wondering, how does all that connect with embodiment? Because being an embodied person means that you have sovereignty over yourself and over your body. And I'm not going to lie, at this moment in time, having sovereignty over yourself and sovereignty over your body is one hell of a political action right now. And it's involved in politics. And the truth is, all of those people who say, I don't want to deal with politics, are really comfortable in their own privilege. And that's a story for another day. And, you know, I understand tuning out of politics or tuning out of things for your mental health. You know, I find myself, I have turned off the TV a lot more and I'm reading a lot more. I've got tons of books to read. And so I'm going to spend my evenings reading, but making sure I am still aware and informed of the things which impact my community. It's just the outlets I was listening to did a lot of, as my grandma would say, chew and re-chew things. And so at some point you're just like, yeah, I'm done with this. But an embodied being means that you have sovereignty over yourself to set those boundaries. And it also means that you can examine to take what works for you and to discard the rest. That's a phrase we actually used a lot in the writer's circle that I belong to. And I think that that's a very good metaphor, because when you bring a story to a writer's circle, everybody reads it. And when you read a book, and we could take, you know, whether it's a fiction book that's been on, you know, the New York Times bestseller list, it could be a book that's been read for generations. And everybody is going to bring their own experiences, their own understanding, their own realization to that book. Everybody's going to bring their own taste to that book. And so in a writer's circle, everybody reads that book, reads, you know, the chapter, the story, whatever you're bringing, and they give feedback. And the rule is, take what works for you, take what resonates with you, and leave the rest. Because not everybody has the right feedback for your story. Not everybody has the right feedback for your life. And so being a sovereign embodied being means that as we're examining these cultural stories, as we're working through these cultural stories, as we work through our personal stories, things that you were taught growing up, you can take what works for you. You can take the good stuff. And you can leave all the rest. You know, I am taking every positive comment my professors give me, and I'm holding that close in my heart because that means a lot to me. But the transphobic, homophobic experiences I had in psychology undergrad, I'm leaving those. Those people didn't, you know, their feedback on my life or on my worldview is not necessary. And frankly, wasn't suitable for a open secular state university. And so when we think about this, being embodied means that we have sovereignty over ourselves. It also means that with that sovereignty, however we choose to show up in the world, however we exist in the world, and again, keeping in mind that hurt people hurt people, and so we have a responsibility not to actively seek to hurt people. We will make mistakes. It happens. We're human. We should apologize for those and learn how to do better. But for the most part, if you're just out here living your life and, you know, vibing and loving on the things that you love and vibe on, the music you like, the movies you like, the TV you like, loving who you love, and you're, for the most part, you're doing the work that you want to do or doing something that you're okay doing to put food on the table. You know, as long as you're out here just trying to exist, being embodied and thinking about embodiment gives you permission to do that. If, you know, being embodied gives you permission to see your whole self and to bring your whole self into any experience. And so embodiment and authenticity go hand in hand. Embodiment and authenticity pretty much are best friends. And again, there's times where you might want to not bring your authentic self for your own safety into an environment, but being embodied means you also get to make that choice, and you also get to say, hey, this environment isn't safe for me. And whether you do that just internally, whether you do that with your close circle of friends and people who care about you, whether you do that online and say, this environment is not safe for me, and so I am not bringing my whole self there. Whether you engage or not, that is all about being embodied. And so I feel like I've given you a lot to think about. I feel like I've done a good job of talking about embodiment. It is not something that boils down to a 2-second snap judgment. It's not something that boils down to an either or, you know, binary type thinking. And I think that is why that being embodied, seeing yourself as a being who is becoming, is something that we don't talk enough about. And so I think I will be talking about that. That is part of my work as a body theologian. And so I will hopefully be doing kind of, you know, this will hopefully kick off a series of podcasts about becoming and about being that hopefully may spark some conversation. So, you know, if you like what I am saying here, I hope you like, subscribe, follow wherever you get your podcasts. Like, subscribe, follow to my blog, my social media. And if you got questions, if something really resonated with you, I would love it if you would drop a comment or head over to feathermanesoul.com. I've got a contact form there. And let me know what you think. And I look forward to diving into some of these topics in more detail in the future. Be kind to yourself. You've been listening to the Feather Mane Soul Wisdom Podcast, hosted by Kit Kailstow. Learn more about Feather Mane Soul at feathermanesoul.com. Kit's passionate about embodied living and finding authentic joy by connecting with yourself and others. Kit loves working with neurodivergent, chronically ill, or disabled individuals, as well as anyone who wants to reclaim the stories and find new stories for them. Music is Running with the Horses by Purple Planet Music. This podcast is hosted on the Muse Charmer Media Network. Find out more by visiting the podcast website and following the links to Muse Charmer. Please don't forget to like, subscribe, or follow the podcast at your favorite podcast listening or social media site. Thank you.